Hello and welcome to KUAR's Week in Review on the podcast for the week ending Friday, July 21st.
Arkansas's U.S. Senators Bozeman and Cotton support repealing without immediately replacing the Affordable Care Act. Meanwhile, Governor Asa Hutchinson suggests it may be time for a bipartisan approach.
And Arkansan has a voice on President Trump's Voter Fraud Commission, which met for the first time this week. Also, Arkansas is unique as the only state to submit its voters' data to the commission.
Former Circuit Judge Mike Maggio reports to federal prison to serve his 10-year sentence for bribery. Is he remorseful about reducing a jury verdict in exchange for campaign cash?
And after 40 years, Riverfest is no more. Organizers say the musical acts are simply getting too pricey.
That's all coming up on KUAR's Week in Review. I'm Chris Hickey.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
And I'm Michael Hepling.
Well, that's the sound of about 20 Arkansas protesters gathered outside the U.S. Senate office in Washington, D.C. this week, there to protest the Republican health care bill that's apparently stalled in the Senate, or at least faltering because of lack of support, lack of the needed 50 votes to pass a measure. Of course, this was a bill that's gone through some changes, but none too substantial since 13 senators crafted it behind closed doors earlier this summer. In light of this, our own two U.S. senators, John Bozeman and Tom Cotton, have been relatively silent, shall we say, on the health care legislation and the effects it would have in Arkansas, including the possible drop of Medicaid coverage for up to 300,000 Arkansans, something Governor Asa Hutchinson has been pretty vocal about, that rolling back of Medicaid expansion. Let's talk about these senators and their position, and they kind of broke their silence in a way this week, at least Senator Cotton did, Jacob, and Senator Bozeman to an extent. What are they saying now? Obviously, there's even been a suggestion or the floating of the proposal to repeal the Affordable Care Act without an immediate replacement.
Yeah, I'd say that's the big change this week, is that since there's apparent that because of John McCain's medical illness that they won't have the votes to pass it, Tom Cotton came out and did several media shows where he talked about the health care bill for the first time at length. He said he was disappointed it didn't pass before he didn't give a position on it, despite being one of the authors of it. His argument basically after that news was we should vote for a repeal without a replacement, because he thinks the replacement is what's generating the most friction within the Republican Party, and that they can figure that out after the 2018 election. And that's a flip from something he had said as early as January. He said we have to have the replacement at the same time, but he said circumstances had changed, so has his argument. Let's hear from Senator Cotton. Here's him. He's on KARN, talk radio show in Little Rock.
If we can't develop a new system right away because there's too many disagreements within the Senate, I still think we need to put the marker down. We need to fulfill the promise on which we campaigned for four straight elections, and then we can have another election, because that bill on which we all voted 2 years ago has a two-year timeline on it. So that would allow us to reach the kind of consensus we need. It would also allow the American people to render their verdict on what they want from their healthcare system in the future.
So voters win under this scenario. But as he said, you know, that they've campaigned on this for four election cycles. He knows that, you know, they're failing to deliver on that campaign promise. He kind of addressed that as well.
Frankly, it's incumbent upon the governing party to reach that kind of consensus. I'm disappointed we didn't. I wish that the four no votes on this bill, and maybe more who will announce their opposition today, that it's not moving forward, would have at least allowed us to start debate and seen where the votes are and reach that kind of consensus. But again, healthcare is too important to too many Arkansans for us to simply, you know, drop it, walk away from it, move on to other issues.
So that was on Monday or Tuesday. But Mitch McConnell, under the president's directive, it appears, they're going to have a vote next week, even if they don't have the votes to do it, which it appears they don't. They're going to hold a vote anyway. I spoke to a political scientist at the University of Central Arkansas, Heather Yates. She said basically that because they don't have the support, that's why they've been so quiet, and it is unusual that they'd be so quiet as compared to, say, Democrats in 2009.
Now that it's apparent that the GOP one-party approach to health care reform has failed, they are on radio blackout, if you will. There's no messaging coming out of the Republican senators, especially the Republican senators like Bozeman and Cotton, who were on that working group, because the Republican leadership really is taking the time to recraft the message and having to really figure out how they need to reframe it.
Chris or Michael, I don't know if you, I think one of you guys looked at Governor Asa Hutchinson's reaction earlier this week. I don't know if you wanted to comment, but she said there, Heather Yates, that the one-party approach appears to be failing. The governor has called for a bipartisan solution.
Yeah, Governor Asa Hutchinson talked on several national media programs and said he disagreed with what was suggested by the senators to have a repeal but not have a replacement bill in place. He said that it's key for states like Arkansas that are counting on those federal dollars, in the case of Arkansas, for the Medicaid expansion program. It's key that something be in place. Otherwise, there would be a lot of uncertainty. And he said that we really need to, in his words, let the dust settle a bit, and some wise heads need to get back together, and said there really needs to be a bipartisan solution. Republicans have pretty much taken this all on themselves and haven't attempted really to work with Democrats on this, counting on the fact that they have a majority in the Senate. But the fact that you have a handful of Republicans who have been uncomfortable about the bills that have come up, that's kept them from getting the majority needed.
And one of those media outlets Governor Hutchinson spoke on was NPR's Morning Edition. Here he is specifically talking about what it might take for a bipartisan approach. He suggested that instead of calling for repeal of the Affordable Care Act, in order to work with Democrats, Republicans might have to adopt a new message.
That's the challenge with Democrats. They won't come on if you if you're going to say you repeal it. But you've got to have a bipartisan solution here, because you don't have the votes to repeal. If you don't have the votes to, with the new Senate plan and to reform it, then you've got to start saying there's things we can't agree upon, let's move forward with those.
The governor, of course, has asked the federal government to reduce the Medicaid expansion population by instituting a coverage limit for those making above 100% of the federal poverty level. So in a way, he's taking a similar approach in sort of rolling back Medicaid expansion population, but not to the extent that the Republican legislation does in the Senate.
Right, yeah, the governor has really accepted the basic premise of some type of Medicaid expansion seems to be beneficial for people in hospitals and things like that, where our senators and congressmen would seem like they'd rather have it done away with.
And it's been interesting, too, the political dynamics of this. The governor using very polite language on this, even though he has a different position from the senators, but still not wanting to be too pointed in his criticism. That's something you've seen here within the Republican Party, is even where you do have different positions here. The governor being very cautious about this, and still in the comment that you played, Chris, there, putting the blame more toward Democrats.
Yeah, and he said throughout this process that he's been speaking with Senators Cotton and Bozeman on the phone, at least. It's unclear, though, whether or not those senators, it appears they haven't quite, you know, listened fully to his concerns.
I've asked both their offices specifically, like, a number of times, like, about the governor's concerns, and they've always said, we've relayed them, but they'll never say whether they agreed with him or not. So, you know, it's different message if you agree with it or not, the way you relay it, probably. But one last cut from Heather Yates. She basically said that even though the health care bill seems to be failing, and it is a failure of Republicans that passed their major campaign promise, it probably won't hurt Tom Cotton or anybody like that.
I don't anticipate there's going to be a lot of blame put on Tom Cotton or at his door on this, because he's largely framing this as few or a handful of Republican senators who have defected. Using Tom Cotton's words, is that they're hypocritical Republicans. And so the way he's framing it is actually going to deflect a lot of blame. So I don't anticipate the average Arkansan voter will blame him per se, but will place blame on the Republican Party overall.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to any developments.
Yeah, I think Tuesday is when they're planning a vote at this point.
Okay.
Let's stick with action in the nation's capital for a little bit. There's a voter integrity commission that's been talked about for a while. They finally had their first meeting. Arkansas is the only state in the nation that answered the commission's request to submit voter information, but then the commission said, actually, you should delete what you uploaded. Chris, you followed this a little bit?
Yeah, the state secretary of state's office did submit some information, which is publicly available, information on dates of birth, political party affiliations, names, addresses of voters in the state to this Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity, which had requested of all 50 states some information of some sort. They uploaded it to the Secretary of State's office to a government server, but there's a lawsuit in the works from the Electronic Privacy Information Center against the use of the server, and the commission asked Arkansas to delete this information because it may be susceptible to some kind of hack. But aside from that, this commission, of course, was set up as a promise by President Donald Trump, who, of course, has made this unfounded claim that millions have voted illegally in the last election. And
all for his opponent as well.
Yeah, for Hillary Clinton, up to 3 million or so illegal votes, supposedly, something that there's no evidence to back up, of course. The commission met for the first time, as we noted, with the intention of looking at voter fraud in the states. And it's a 12-member commission. It's chaired by the former Secretary of State of Kansas, as well as Vice President Mike Pence. They had a meeting where all the 12 members of the commission made a brief statement. One appointee is a former state representative from Arkansas, Democrat David Dunn, who's from Forest City. He's now working as a lobbyist, but he had an interesting opening statement. He said that the request for submission of voter data from the states to this commission did raise concerns for him.
I believe that any data, statistics, or information collected by us or by the state should be held in our trust and safeguarded from any political misuse. And finally, I hope that the activities of this bipartisan commission are completely transparent and public. It's important that our work be conducted with the highest level of integrity and that a variety of views can be expressed and considered.
So there he is kind of admonishing the commission to take this stuff pretty seriously and guard the privacy of the information, something that could be argued wasn't entirely done in the first place by asking the states to submit wholesale this public information, but to keep it in a centralized database raised a lot of concerns for a lot of people and drew a lot of rebukes from a lot of secretaries of state, both Republican and Democrat, from around the country.
Yeah, and Governor Hutchinson even in previous weeks.
Yeah, he had in interviews, and he also released a statement saying that the request was overly broad. He had some concerns about it as well, but didn't give a wholesale rebuke of the request, saying that some of the information should be withheld, but not all. So David Dunn, in his statement, it was very brief, probably about 5 minutes in this first meeting. He also spoke about the need to improve the accuracy and efficiency of state and local voting systems.
Whether it's an increasing training of election and poll workers, improving communication between the states and localities across states, updating voter machines, or providing funds to assist localities in carrying out their voting and election work.
Not a lot that came out of the commission in terms of any decisions or any actions, but it's something to be closely watched, of course. One of the big issues the last election campaign was the Russian meddling in elections or the attempt to hack even state and local voting systems. Given that President Trump has been reluctant to admit the Russian meddling in the election, his appointed commission, it'll be interesting to see whether they take a serious look at that issue as well. Another big headline this week revolved around a figure who's been in the news for quite some time, former Circuit Judge Mike Maggio of Faulkner County, who kind of fell from grace over first some online comments that he had posted that led to an investigation, to the eventual pleading of reducing a jury verdict or the award in a jury verdict in a nursing home negligence case in one of the court proceedings that he presided over. And last year, he was sentenced to 10 years in federal prison. Over the past year, he's been appealing that case in higher courts. But this week, he was told to report to prison. Michael, you've been kind of following this, and he actually spoke to one news agency, gave an exclusive interview to KARK. What was he saying?
Well, he said he's been preparing for this. He has been trying to withdraw the guilty plea that he originally had given and was turned down on that. That decision was then appealed to a 3-judge panel of the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. They turned him down. So last week, federal judge Brian Miller said that it was time for Maggio to begin his 10-year prison sentence. That still, the decision is probably going to be appealed further, Maggio's attorney said, perhaps a request for the full Eighth Circuit to consider it, or even the U.S. Supreme Court. There was a last-minute request on Tuesday that the start of his sentence be pushed back a week. That was again delayed. So on Wednesday, Maggio showed up about a half hour before the 2 p.m. deadline to the U.S. Marshals and turned himself in. But before he went in outside the courthouse, he spoke at a pretty good length, I think about 13 minutes or so, with KARK Channel 4 here in Little Rock, and said for one thing he felt that the public's view of this, there had been a rush to judgment, but he also talked about just the difficulty for him, and here's some of what he said.
This is a tough, tough day for me, for my family, for my friends, for my supporters. I would like to think that I'm much, much more than this. The portrayal of me has not been kind these last almost 4 years. But anybody that knows me, and anybody that knows me, knows that I'm not what's been reported.
And what was reported, as you said, Chris, was pretty much that he had previously acknowledged receiving campaign contributions. Those contributions were followed immediately by him reducing the damage award against a nursing homeowner, Michael Morton. And this was a $5 million wrongful death case. The fine was then reduced to $1 million. The investigation itself is still open. There's long been talk about whether or not Michael Morton or the fundraiser who helped facilitate this, Gilbert Baker, a former state lawmaker, head of the state Republican Party, whether they could be implicated in this. So the appeal continues while Maggio starts the sentence, but whether or not he talks with investigators, if perhaps he says something that implicates them, that's still something that there's a lot of talk about. No charges have been filed against them, but with this being an open investigation, there's still just a lot of wondering if Maggio's appeals that continue now, if those are turned down, whether or not he could start actually working with investigators more.
On Arkansas Week today, Steve Bronner kind of joked, if there's a rush to judgment, it's probably because Maggio said he was guilty.
Yeah. And I thought it was notable. The reporter for KRK asked him if he had any regrets at any point. And he said, well, I wouldn't plead, that's for sure. Something to the... So he really kind of... He tried to cast himself as a victim. And
said there was... that he was kind of pressured into it, is what he said.
Well, some sad news this week. We learned that the popular, or what we thought was maybe a popular festival that occurs every year around Memorial Day in Little Rock, Riverfest, will be no longer doing an event next year or the year after that or the year after that, potentially. It's been around for 40 years, attracting musical acts of national acclaim to the River Market area. Michael, what's going on? Why are the organizers saying they can't sustain another River Fest?
Well, it's a whole host of factors. It's competition from other music festivals. It's the cost to get entertainers in. I heard one example that when Snoop Dogg was brought in, maybe a decade ago or so, he was $80,000. Mm. Now he is something like more in the range, I think $300,000 or $400,000. Mm. Riverfest, I think the budget's about $800,000. There are a whole host of factors that are coming into play here. But I spoke with Deanna Corte, who has been the executive director for the last few years of Riverfest. And she said the board of directors met and on Tuesday just decided that they really can't keep going the way things are working right now. Just felt that it was time to end Riverfest sort of on a high note, she said, without, you know, defaulting on expenses or other things, just thought it was time to put an end to it. So in June, we didn't know it obviously at the time, but that was the last Riverfest. And I recorded just a little bit of video by chance. I went out there to catch Morris Day and the Time on the last night of Riverfest. I don't know if he was the absolute last performer. I'm not sure what all stages were going on. But and y'all are, you know, a little bit younger than me. You know, when I was, I think it was about sixth grade, whenever Prince in the movie Purple Rain came out, Morris Day was kind of Prince's alter ego in the movie, his competitor. So, you know, I grew up in the years when Morris Day was huge there for a short while. Anyway, here's just a brief little snippet from one of the last few moments of Riverfest.
Just like you take a cold bottle of champagne out of the refrigerator and you set it on the counter, what does it begin to do? Sound like a handful of you know, but most of you don't. It begins to condensate, little rock. You dig, because that's what you do when you cool from the inside out. So please understand, Morris is not sweating, I'm condensating. And hell yes, little rock, Morris Day is still cool.
Cool enough to refer to himself in the third person,
yeah. Guess. Yeah, and Morris Day, you know, he gets up there, you know, and he always says a guy who comes out with a mirror and then he dances looking at himself in the mirror, and that was part of his whole shtick. But, you know, part of Riverfest had changed in recent years. It had become more of a music festival. There also used to be more of a family element to it. They split off the family part of the festival into a different time of the year. And there's some blame that maybe that was a factor in contributing to this. But even beyond just the event and going to it itself, this had a big impact on businesses. At its height, the festival attracted a quarter of a million attendees with an annual economic impact of $33 million. And restaurants downtown said that they would make drastically more money on weekends when Riverfest was going on. It began in 1978 in Murray Park as the Summer Arts Festival, and it eventually moved to downtown when it was held on Memorial Day weekend. But the decision was made to move the time, and there are, it sounds like, efforts to try and adjust for the times, but in the end, the organizers said that just too many. There were other festivals that are now going on with more acts, and it was just getting harder to compete.
I'm going to make a prediction. I bet there'll be a similar thing like Riverfest, if not called Riverfest again in the future. I think part of this is probably that it was a nonprofit volunteer board, because they still had like 130,000 people come. So there's clearly like a huge demand for like a music festival type thing. In the past, they, I think several years before that, they had a record crowd of like 225,000. So it's like a huge drop. And I don't know if they were planning for like a quarter of a million people every time, but there's a scale that it would clearly work at. There's concerts in Little Rock all the time. So there's some type of thing outside that is a concert with food trucks is like inevitable and doable.
And maybe if it were a festival that were not made up of and not to be, you know, mean, but it's almost kind of a joke who are the washed-up acts who are going to be playing at Riverfest this year. And you'll have one act to usually try to appeal to every genre. It's sort of the same thing at the Arkansas State Fair each year. So maybe if it were more of an effort to bring in new acts, and it could probably be done in a very different way.
Yeah. It seems like it's all sorts of ways. Like, or they could just say, we're the state fair for the summertime, you know, and that could be their thing.
And maybe not being as big, you know, they've got like a little fair type area and, you know, Ferris wheels and things like that. Maybe if they tried to downsize it some and just make it more about the music and not try to bring in as big a crowd, just focus a little more on what they want to be.
Yeah, the scale is the question, perhaps.
Did you go to the last Riverfest, Chris?
I didn't go to this year's.
Why not?
I think I was out of town, actually.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
Were you in town on Memorial Day weekend?
No.
Where it used to be? Okay. Michael, you went?
I only went because a friend invited me who had tickets, and otherwise I wouldn't have sought it out, but thought more a stay in the time. Sure, why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only time I went was last year. You know, it was fine. Tickets were expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Saw some musical acts that I liked, some didn't like.
And Riverbucks. Riverbucks are terrible.
Yeah.
You trade real money in for money you can lose.
Well, any ideas of what other festival in Arkansas may take up the mantle of the premier music fest in Arkansas until Riverfest comes back?
Something in Fayetteville, probably.
Yeah. Well, with that, thanks for listening to KUAR's Week in Review podcast, available to you every week from KUAR.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. KUAR is a listener-supported service, but editorially independent from the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. I'm Chris Hickey.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
And I'm Michael Heplin.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.